All right, guys, welcome back to Joseph Smith, Impressions of a Prophet. I'm Clayton Pixton.
And I'm Susan Easton Black.
Susan is our star. I'm just kind of the guy behind all the knobs and buttons, and I'm in charge of the intro and outro music. Susan, we talked about last time independence, how it was designated by the Lord as the new Jerusalem. So the saints had come to independence, some of them, as called by the prophet, and as they, I guess, elected to go. And then they went through Bishop Partridge once they got there, quite a journey, really. And once they passed that kind of screening process, you might say, they were able to kind of join the society and build up Zion, or begin to build up Zion. So, and I had a follow-up question. I had asked you last time about when they arrived, and they talked to Bishop Partridge, and they gave kind of an inventory of their possessions. You said that they didn't kind of turn it all in and get back what they needed. It was more like Bishop Partridge was just like, okay, you are now a steward of all your property.
Right, that's right.
So to clarify, I guess, there was no like, I came here and I have, you know, two teams of oxen, and Bishop Partridge is like, oh, well, welcome to Zion, and oh, I see you have two teams of oxen. You know, Brother Jones over here, he doesn't have any, so, you know, welcome here, and we're going to take one of yours and give it to him, and, you know, see what you've got. It wasn't like that, right?
Right. We don't see that kind of example anywhere on the records that been saved. It's like you came to independence owning things, but once you've met with Bishop Partridge, you leave having a stewardship over those items.
And nor was it like, oh, I'm here. Hi, Bishop. My name is so-and-so, and boy, I just have nothing. I don't have any shoes or anything. And Bishop Partridge would then say, oh, well, so-and-so down the street has, you know, more pairs of shoes than he needs. Get them from him. It wasn't like that. They would, whatever they got would be from the storehouse.
Right.
Is that,
it was a storehouse. Of course, it will take a while to get everything set up. And a lot of what we're talking about is more theory than actuality. In other words, the grand experiment lasted less than 2 years. And so, you know, you start out with a few people, and by the time you've got about 1,200, they're starting to be able to do what you're suggesting, where they had more of a place like a storehouse they could go to. But okay, Initially, at first, of course, not.
Okay. So that clarifies it for me, I think. I guess I'm partly wondering how it'll go, you know, maybe in the future if we ever give this another shot.
Yeah. Well, for sure, I do know you can't be selfish.
Yeah.
For it to work, yeah.
And we'll maybe figure out why today, right?
I hope so.
Okay, so I'm getting ahead of myself. So, like I said, I'm in charge of the intro and outro music. So here goes intro for today. This is Rock of Ages. Rock of Ages, cleft for me. Let me hide myself in thee. Let the water and the blood from my wounded side which flowed be of sin the double cure. Save from wrath and make me pure. All right.
Yeah.
That's an old one. I don't know if that was in the first hymn book or not, but I think it's an old one.
Yeah, it's an old one for sure.
Okay, well, Susan, I'd talked with you a little earlier that I was going to, since we're talking about independence, I happen to live here, right, 40 minutes mm-hmm. from independence, and I thought I'd just give maybe for our listeners just a little taste of what it's like in 2023. So when I started a job here maybe 12 years ago, it came out that I was a member of the church, and they were like, oh, that's interesting. You know, I mean, no disrespect, but there's this joke that, And they told me this joke, and I don't remember exactly how it goes, but the punchline was that Jesus was going to come to Independence. And when they said that, they started cracking up. Why was that funny to them? And I think the reason is because Independence, the town right now, is not, maybe considered a place that you'd imagine Jesus picking to come to the earth. You've been there, surely.
Several times.
Susan, yeah.
Yeah, spent months at a time.
Later at that same job, I was actually in a building in Independence, and I was, the building wasn't real nice. It had some issues, and it's like, wow, this is kind of an interesting place. I wonder how far I am from, downtown Independence. And I looked on my, phone or whatever, and I was like two blocks away. And anyway, I don't want to offend anybody from Independence, but right now it's just kind of a suburb of Kansas City. Anyway, just thought I'd share that from the perspective of a local. So the things may be very different, right?
I would imagine that there will be a lot of differences. When it finally is finished,
and people won't be laughing at that punchline, maybe. Anyway, okay. So, and sorry for talking so much here, but so the Saints had come to Independence. They had started their community, and they're starting to get really persecuted after a while. You talked about the barns being burned down, and them raising them up again, and not mixing well with the locals. I kind of imagine from there, I'm trying to see from their perspective. I mean, obviously I can't really justify kicking anybody out or, destroying property or anything. That's just unconstitutional, yeah. No matter how you cut it. But I'm trying to see from their perspective, like these people coming in and they believe that they're gonna, turn this into Zion. And yeah, anyway, can you give us any more insight on how they felt and how they saw that?
Well, we're there from 1831 through the most of 1833, so you've got a 2-year about experience. And try and imagine, like you're talking about, you've got the settlers there in town who are living in a frontier town. They're on the edge of society, and for many of them, they feel that way. They've been beaver trappers, fur hunters. You've got Spanish. You've got Native Americans. You've got Indian agents. You've got government. You've got some military. And they're the farthest town west. And here come then the Latter-day Saints literally believing that they're coming to build Zion and New Jerusalem, and there are 24 interconnected temples, and suddenly you can really see it's hardly going to work neighbor to neighbor because they have such different views of the same land.
Anyway, I'll leave my part at that.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Tonight we're going to talk about the fall of Zion, why the grand experiment didn't work, and then the attempt to redeem Zion with a group now called Zion's Camp. So that's what we're going to do tonight. We know as we left off last time, we have 1,200 Latter-day Saints, most of them then being called up to Zion and electing to go, hoping to make their calling and election sure. Many of the Saints then coming from Kirtland, about 800 miles to this frontier community. And like you've talked about, Clayton, you've got two dramatically different types of people. You've got the original settlers, most of them from Kentucky, that actually were trying to do farms and set up shops. So you've got the old settlers, and you've got, here come the Latter-day Saints. Most of them are New England born and bred, and obviously different temperament, different mannerisms. And here come these 1,200 Saints to Independence. It's still the frontier town, and the year is 1831. As we go on then tonight, we're going to find that 2 years later, because of the number of Latter-day Saints coming into the area, they are viewed as a political threat. Independence and that part of Missouri was considered a slave state. In other words, even Alexander Doniphan, the man that Peter Whitmer Jr. made a suit for, he had his slaves there. Although a single man at the time, he had his slaves in Independence. And so you've got, here come these Northerners. They become a real political threat, or they're going to turn things around so that Independence will not be viewed as a slave community. Adding to the problems is that our newspaper, which was being printed in town, called the Evening and Morning Star, the evening of Saturday Eve of the morning of the coming of Christ, was what the newspaper was to represent. And at one point, the editor, W.W. Phelps, prints an article titled The Free People of Color, and many of the Missourians not reading, at least a full thing, looking at the just title, thought that the Latter-day Saints were inviting free black men to come to Independence. And these settlers literally formed a secret constitution by July of 1833 to try and rid their town of Latter-day Saints. And at the very same time, you get daily, here come additional Latter-day Saints, so excited to be in a land where they could build up a Zion society, to build their temples, to literally build New Jerusalem. And they're coming not knowing that there is a secret constitution to rid their town of Latter-day Saints, that it's oil and water between the neighbors, you can never mix it, until finally the disaster hits. And the disaster occurred on a tributary of the Missouri River called Big Blue. And so on November 4th, 1833, you actually get your first battle. And here comes up a load of Latter-day Saints that are coming down the Big Blue River. It's always easier to travel by water then. And suddenly they are refused to be allowed to go any farther. And you have a mob now attacking. They knew at that point, by November of 33, they couldn't or didn't plan on attacking individual homes, but at least we can stop the next group from coming. But once you have a battle of Big Blue and you have literally harm on both sides, harm to the old settlers, harm to the newcomers coming in, battle resulting in death, that suddenly there's going to be a real disaster will hit then the area for Latter-day Saints. So the disaster is the exodus from Jackson County. Remember, Independence is in Jackson County, a county named for Andrew Jackson, president of the United States.
Did the battle at Big Blue, what exactly went down there? Were there... Was anybody killed?
Death on both sides. People are wounded. People are hurt. And what you get is, it's just a mob action, right? But suddenly now they're going to call out the militia. And the Southern gentleman, once he's put on that military uniform, these Northerners, Latter-day Saints, are really facing a problem as it comes to the exodus. So what you get is they now, they come to literally every home, and the big questions being asked are you a Latter-day Saint? They called it then Mormon. And then the other was, do you believe the Book of Mormon, the Word of God? And you answer yes, a man subject to be beaten, a woman verbally, physically abused, a child even subject to being kidnapped, because after all, he'd only grew up to be a Latter-day Saint. Now, to assure that the Latter-day Saints would literally leave their entire county, not just Independence, that they set a wall of fire wherever the Latter-day Saints had lived so that they would not have homes to return to. And it's more than an exodus. It's literally a driving of the Latter-day Saints to the Missouri River, with the idea that if they wanted to, the militia would then kill them all and do it all at once. So you get the forced leaving of their homes, the forced leaving of their property, their cattle, their chickens, you know, anything that they own, their bedding. And with clothes on the back, they're now on the run.
So, and what's the time frame of this in relation to the Battle of the Big Blue? And
well, you get the Battle of the Big Blue in November of 33, and you'd say this is occurring immediately after. So it's winter and dead of winter. I mean, it's cold out there where you live in winter. Yeah. And the Saints are definitely suffering, and they're on the move. So from there, as they get themselves down by the river, you're still looking at November. But what you see is something that it's remarked years later, that as the Saints are on the move heading to the river, they always call this the night the stars fell. It's November 13th of 1833. So you can see it's just literally days after that battle at Big Blue. But many people back then were saying this is the night the stars fell. This is one of the signs of the sun, coming of the Son of Man. So it was this great meteor shower. The shower was so shocking to the mobs and the Latter-day Saints that the mobbers backed off with the idea they'd be able to come and then harass the men, women, and children who were Latter-day Saints down at the river the next day. In other words, let's back off. It kind of spooked them, right? Hmm. And so they backed off, the mob. As they backed off, we're going to find that the Latter-day Saints made a decision that night that they would cross the river. Now, they're crossing the Missouri River, and they're going to cross and go from Jackson County into Clay County, a county named for Henry Clay. You see all these politicians, but Henry Clay, a great speaker in the U.S. Senate. But that night, some of the great heroics in the history of the church occurred. You get men literally going back and across the river, back and forth, carrying women, children. People are holding on to ropes. They're doing everything they can, and then to be able to reach the Clay side where they believe that they will be in safety. Most of the Latter-day Saints, after crossing the river, will end up in the town of Liberty. So notice you've got Independence, you've got Liberty, you have all these kind of patriotic named counties and patriotic named cities. As they cross the river, it's interesting, the first to come to their aid in the morning will be slaves who are up early. And the slaves will literally feed the Latter-day Saints. They will take them into the hovels that they were living in and care for them on that very famous night of November 13th. In the meantime, these Latter-day Saints call to live then these laws of Zion, of consecration and stewardship, will now send two men to tell Joseph that Zion has fallen. The two men were Parley P. Pratt and Lyman White. These two men, who also crossed the river that night, will then work their way as quick as they can to Kirtland, Ohio, and they've got literally a horrific message for the prophet Joseph Smith. And the message is, Zion has fallen. Now, as they do so, for Joseph Smith, when he hears their message, it is reported that he cries like a baby and indicates that he wishes that he could have been with his friends and suffered as they had. In other words, this is a very, very difficult time for the prophet Joseph. And his big question is, can Zion be redeemed? And the Lord literally will give Joseph two choices. One, you can redeem it by money. In other words, you can redeem Zion by purchase. But the saints in Kirtland, it's the first generation Latter-day Saints, they are poor. Recall that Brigham Young is coming to town not owning a pair of shoes. And so when you say redeem Zion by purchase, there was no chance. In other words, we didn't have the funds to be able to buy out the old settlers and to go back and to try and get our lands of inheritance back and begin building this Zion. So the question was, how could Zion be redeemed? And at this point, Joseph's now pleading to the Lord, and he receives a revelation. That revelation we can find today in Doctrine and Covenants, section 103. And in the revelation, he is told, "Behold, this is the blessing which I have promised. After your tribulations," in other words, were the Latter-day Saints facing tribulations? Oh, you bet. You know, the Whitney's store, everything is thrown out. The press at the Evening and Morning Star newspaper office is out on the street. So it's after your tribulations, then will come your redemption. And the redemption of your brethren, even their restoration to the land of Zion. So the promised revelation that Joseph received was, okay, all you people that have suffered and are now in Clay County being cared for by the slaves of masters there in Clay counties, who are in essence cousins to those in Jackson County, guess what? Your redemption is coming. And the redemption of your brethren, not just you, but your brethren there in Zion. And you will be able to go back and one day restore this land of Zion. So with that, as the revelation continues, "Behold, I say unto you, the redemption of Zion must needs come by power." Now, power is a whole bunch different than money. You know, buy something, but power is might. And in this case, "Behold, I say unto you, the redemption of Zion must needs come by power." And with this, then Joseph then takes upon himself to organize a group called Zion's Camp. Now, that's an incredible thought. Here's Joseph in Kirtland. Here's people in Kirtland who still have not been able to reach the point where they and their families can be called to go up to Zion and can be elected to go to Zion, but yet are you willing to redeem Zion so those who have been called and elected to be there can return to their lands of inheritance? So Joseph's plan is to organize Zion's Camp and to be the leader of the men. He now asks the Lord, you know, it's one thing to organize a kind of quasi-military organization, but the question is, before you start out, can you get an assurance that you can have victory? And you see Joseph in the revelation asking, well, what if I get 500 men? Can I have victory? And the Lord says, sure. Well, how about 400, 300, 200? And finally it says, okay, Joseph, you get 200 men. I promise you victory. Well, at this point, it's now recruiting time. And as we look at the recruitment, we're going to see by February of 1834. So notice, the Saints are kicked out of Jackson County, Independence area, in November of 1833. And you've got about, 3 months later, February 1834, Joseph will speak to the Kirtland High Council. And he will ask them, "Will you sanction my plan to organize an army where I'm going to get 200 men at the very least, and we're going to go up and redeem Zion?" And to the credit of the Kirtland High Council, of which Martin Harris was a member, they voted, yes, we will sanction your plan to organize an army. So by March, people were invited to recruit for Zion's Camp. In Kirtland, as the opportunity came to be one of those who recruited, there were only 40 men who volunteered to be in Zion's Camp by May of 1834 from Kirtland. So you've got a real problem. There's no way you can have victory with 40. You know, if you want power, you got to have more than 40. And so Joseph will literally send Latter-day Saints, including his brother Hiram and Parley P. Pratt, through various parts of the United States, where there were new converts, such as Wilford Woodruff, who hadn't migrated yet to Kirtland, to ask them, hey, we're going to be leaving on a march called Science Camp, and will you come along and join me? So Joseph will leave Kirtland in May of 1834 with 40 men on Science Camp, and not quite daily, but weekly, various groups of men who are brand new converts. You know, they've just been baptized. They haven't made it to Kirtland. They're not invited to go to Independence, but they will now join with Joseph. Until you'd say by June 8th, 1834, Joseph literally has 207 men. And you'd say, well, how's he doing? And I go, you know, he's already partway to Independence. And you'd say, is that faith? And I go, yeah, that's faith. And so he's got 207 men. But you'll notice as we look at time period, by July of 1834, Zion's camp will be disbanded. So we're going to learn, well, what happens then from these eager recruits? Why in the world is it disbanded, especially when they're just a few miles from Independence? Okay, you'd say, well, of those then joining in Zion's camp, you know, you'd say it's kind of who's who that we talk about and have talked about for years and years. Brigham Young is one of the first 40 to sign up and say, I'm going. And even though he becomes a new husband, you know, he goes, I'm off. In other words, the prophet's issued a call, I'm going. Heber C. Kimball says, I'm going. Martin Harris, older man, says, hey, I'm going. I'm going to volunteer some wagons. Frederick G. Williams, a great friend, a doctor, he says, I'm coming. George A. Smith, and of course, a new convert, Wilford Woodruff, way out there, says, hey, hold up, I'm coming, I'm coming. Don't get there, I'm coming to fight for people that I've never met. Now, you can see that the march to Zion, you're looking about 800 miles. You're starting out from Kirtland in Ohio. You've got to get through Indiana. You've got to pass through Illinois. You literally are going all across the state of Missouri until the big hope is you make it into Liberty, where the saints in Clay County are now living. You cross the Missouri River and get down to Independence, and you put back all of those people just waiting for their chance to get back their lands of inheritance. So you've got about an 800-mile journey, and with that, here goes. So Joseph said along the way, notwithstanding our enemies were continually breathing threats of violence, we did not fear, neither did we hesitate to prosecute our journey. In other words, we're not stopping, for Joseph said, God was with us, you know, in other words, in this Zion's camp, and his angels went before us, and the faith of our little band was unwavering. And then he said, we know that angels were our companions, for we saw them. And it wasn't just Joseph, like Parley at one point, you know, an angel came to wake him up. In other words, come on, Parley, get up, keep going. But it's interesting along the way with these enemies continually threatening, you can't have everyone coming to Joseph and saying, now what, where are we going? And Joseph will literally take upon himself a new name, and he will call himself Squire Cook. In other words, you know, okay, you know, I've got everybody's breathing violence, but one thing he does is he divides the camp into groups of 10 to 12 men and asks them to select someone in their camp who will report to him. And years later, Brigham Young, after he had been appointed the territorial governor of Utah, was asked, what is the greatest honor that was ever given to you by man? I'm not talking God, but by man. What is the greatest honor that was ever given to you by man? And his comment was, oh, that's easy. He said, I'm a young man. I'm a painter. I'm a glazer. I'm a carpenter. And I'm in this kind of group of 10 to 12 men. And I was selected to report to Joseph every day. And so you get this kind of dividing of the group. Okay, as we look further, we'd say, so was it because of the enemies always threatening that there were difficulties on the march? And I'd say, oh, sure. But what was the biggest problem on the march? And I don't know, maybe Clayton, we learned something about this in our own lives. Yeah. But you'd say it's because the men murmured. I'm going to take you through, you know, typical kind of conditions. They were expected to travel from 20 to 40 miles a day. Just that alone, pushing and pulling oxen, horses, you know, wagons, I'm sure I would murmur. Then, of course, you've got issues along the way. They're heading towards summer, right? You've got heat. You've got amazing humidity out where you live. You get torrential rain. You got mud. And then sleeping conditions. I'm not much of a camper. Maybe you are, but, you know, sleeping out every night. They get ready to go. Wagons are broken. Equipment's broken. Then, of course, always food shortage. And then the food not always healthy. And then, of course, great fatigue and sickness along the way. So of all the issues facing these 207 men on Zion's camp, no issue appeared greater than that of murmuring. And Joseph now became very concerned about the murmuring. And he said, he stopped the camp at one point and he said, our murmuring and fault finding, in other words, finding fault with people over very small things and want of humility, you know, you're prideful, had kindled the anger of the Lord against us. In other words, hold on, everybody. You know, you're great men. Some of you new converts, you know, have joined us. Some of you kind of old timers, been through Kirtland. But guess what? You just got to stop this murmuring, finding fault with your other men in the group, your lack of humility, you know, doing the little jobs where you think you should have been the leader, say, to report to Joseph, that the anger of the Lord seems to be kindled against us.
Things are always going to happen, right?
Things are going to happen, the unexpected.
It's the test to see if...
Yeah, we'll, so what I've learned, you know, is, hey, if we ever had called to redeem Zion, just don't murmur.
Yeah, right.
You know,
same with the
yourself,
children of Israel, right, on their journeys.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So you'd say, well, how did they do on the march? Notice they made it all the way through Ohio. They made it through Indiana. Murmur, murmur. They make it all the way through Illinois. And finally, they make it to another tributary of the Missouri River. So this time it's not Big Blue, but it's called the Fishing River. And as they make it to the Fishing River, they're literally within about a day or so of liberty and independence. And they arrive at this river, and suddenly they are met by a group of men who have come out from independence. Now, you can imagine, here's looking at the Fishing River. It isn't much of a tributary, right? It's not like, you know, it's a little bit bigger then. But here come these, like, city fathers out of independence. They'd been hearing rumors that Joseph Smith has 10,000 men who are coming to put the Latter-day Saints back in their lands of inheritance and independence. They're hearing rumors that Joseph is carrying enough weapons to arm all the Native Americans just outside their town, and we're going to come in and literally destroy you old settlers. And they've got all these rumors coming. They're even hearing about a pillar of fire by night and a cloud by day. You know, in other words, wow, who have we awakened? Is this God's army coming upon us? And so about 12 of the kind of city fathers and nobles of independence come out to talk to Joseph to say, okay, let's work out a deal. And what they suggest to Joseph is, okay, we're willing to get out of here, just buy us out. Well, for every property that we owned, they owned at least four, right? And so there's no way to buy them out. They try several things that they think might be reasonable for Joseph. They're impossible. They're not reasonable. And finally, the city fathers say, you know, we've seen what you got. What do you have? 200 maybe men. You know, they all look pretty scrawny, you know, walking a long distance. I tell you what, we're going to cross the river. We're going home. And we've got one of our hometown boys, Lilburn W. Boggs. he's rising up. He's now, eye on the chair of being governor. And we're going to raise up not only our militia, but other militia, and we're going to wipe you out. Well, you can imagine there are bad feelings as they leave Fishing River. Well, they get on the river. Good. And here comes now an incredible storm. And I don't know whether there were holes in the boat that were made by the Latter-day Saints that the men got in. Some say that there were. But before these men were able to reach Independence, that several of them drowned that night. And the word went out among the Latter-day Saints that the destroying angel, you know, was with them and had already begun the redemption now of putting the Latter-day Saints back on their land, because look what happened to these men who came. Yeah. Yeah, went down in this. So you get the next morning, they're now rising up. And as they attempt to rise up to just continue the march, a day, maybe two, to liberty and then independence, suddenly you've got 68 of the men fall ill. And what they have is cholera, which today, you know, we get diphtheria cholera shots. We're not about to get this, but, you know, bad water and causes great, great difficulties. Of the 68 of the 207 men, 68 becoming ill, 14 of them will die. At one point, Joseph attempts to bless one of the men that is ill. And as he puts his hands on his head, it's like Joseph has cholera. He takes his hands off and Joseph is fine. He wonders, what's wrong? What's wrong? Why can't we do this? And the answer was it had everything to do with their murmuring. And you'd say, how in the world did they stay then this plague that had literally attacked them as they're right there at Fishing River? And it was because the men covenanted to keep the Lord's commandments. With uplifted hands, they did this. And what they called the plague was now stayed and stopped.
It wasn't, I want to say Hiram was there with Joseph. Am I remembering that right?
Right. Right.
And Hiram had said, I've seen our mother in vision praying for us.
Right.
Okay.
Right. You get, a lot of blessings and miracles, amid the extremities they're going through. And then you turn to Doctrine and Covenants, section 105. And when Joseph is praying about, we're so close to Zion, we're ready to go. And then he receives a revelation. It is expedient in me that mine elders should wait for a little season for the redemption of Zion. So try and imagine, let us say you'd been one of those marchers who's almost made it 800 miles. You're ready to attack. We're going to take it over with power. You've seen what's happened to the city fathers. This is great. We're going. And suddenly Joseph is now saying, nope. We got to wait for a season for the redemption of Zion. And he will say to those in Clay County, it's only going to be a little season. But I think, you know, from your description of independence now, you know, it's been how many years since 1834, you know, and still the little season goes on. And there's not the redemption that that we're looking for. Well, you can imagine the message was not necessarily well received, especially when Joseph now disbands Zion's camp.
But you can also kind of see, I mean, if it could have been disastrous had the Lord let them go a little further and maybe all, you know, things could have been even worse, right?
Yeah, could have been bloodshed, both sides, yes, could have been awful. But Zion's camp is now disbanded. They're told to go back to Kirtland, wherever they were from, you know, like Wilford Woodruff, go back to your home. And Joseph said, the Lord has accepted our sacrifice and offering, even as he had Abraham's when he offered his son Isaac. In other words, it was like the Lord needed a people who would be willing to give their lives for others, right? Even those they had never met in independence, to put them back in their lands, and their willingness to sacrifice and offer their own lives was compared to that of Abraham, who was willing to offer his son Isaac.
And then at the likeness is that in the last minute, the Lord said no, it was just a test, and similarly for the Zion's camp.
Right, a similar, yes, very similar test for Zion's camp. So the question then comes, well, what was the purpose of Zion's camp? I mean, everybody thought they were going to go fight with power. I'm sure they wanted to know, you know, how are your guns? You know, how are your shoes? You're going to do this? You know, they even had some mock battles along the way in preparation. But notice what Joseph said about the purpose of Zion's camp. God did not want you to fight. He could not organize his kingdom with 12 men to open the gospel door to the nations of the earth, and with 70 men under their direction to follow in their tracks, unless he took them from a body of men who had offered their lives and who had made as great a sacrifice as did Abraham. In other words, what's the purpose of Zion's camp? It was literally to find the leaders of the church, those who would be willing to offer their lives, to give everything for the Lord and his kingdom, those who didn't murmur, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
unbeknownst
just an amazing
to them
story
at the time. But it's neat that Joseph was able to recognize that, you know, soon afterwards. I don't know how soon afterwards, but.
So following then Zion's camp, notice what happened. You'd say, what came out of Zion's camp? What was the good? You'd say 9 members of the Quorum of the 12 were members of Zion's camp and were selected at the Zion camp reunion there on February 14th of 1835. You'd say, well, who else was selected who had participated in Zion's camp? All the first 7 presidents of the 70s, they had been in Zion's camp. When were they selected? Well, it was at the reunion, a meeting of Zion's camp held on February 14th, 1835. You'd be able to say, well, what about the first quorums of the 70? You know, the first and second quorums? You'd say 63 members were all in the first quorum of the 70s, came out of Zion's camp. So notice you put it all together, you've got 79 out of the 207 men who marched with Zion's camp who are called to be literally general authorities in the church. But before their calls, they had to do the Abrahamic sacrifice, right? They had to prove themselves. It wasn't just show up for sacrament, you know, show up for your calling. They literally had to prove they were willing to give their all. You know, many, you can imagine, after Zion's camp murmured even more and thought that, you know, it had been a folly, that the whole plan to redeem it in power, it just never came about. And a couple of them approached Brigham Young with that kind of theory. And Brigham Young.
This was back in this time in the 1830s?
Yeah, very, very time period. It's just after the camp, and they made it back to Kirtland. Brigham Young's comment was, I would not exchange the knowledge I have received this season, in other words, being in Zion's camp, for the whole of Geauga County, of which Geauga County, Kirtland, was a small rural community. So for Brigham Young, it was worth everything that he had gone through to kind of walk and talk and be with the prophet of God for those days.
What a visionary.
Yeah, visionary man for sure. Well, as we leave off today, we find Latter-day Saints concluded, we're going to stay in Clay County. Now, what they had been doing before Zion's camp was disbanded, they'd literally been, in their own way, acting the part of slaves. They'd been helping in the houses, in the fields, just kind of waiting to be able to cross the Missouri River to gain back their lands of inheritance and rebuild their houses in Zion. But when they hear they need to wait for a little season, now that they're in Clay County, their conclusion is, we'll build stores again. You know, we're going to just set ourselves here as permanent residents and wait for that little season. And what we're going to find next time is that the people in Clay County, who are also originated from Kentucky, many of them are cousins to those that lived in Jackson County. You're going to get that same kind of oil and water doesn't mix. The neighbors are, it's tough. They like the Latter-day Saints when they're helping in their fields and their houses. But when they have houses of their own and are right next door neighbors and businesses that are right next door to theirs, they don't like us either. And so next time we meet, we're going to talk about the Latter-day Saint experience in Clay County and the need to then move north and eventually an extermination order against the Latter-day Saints. So it's such a story, Clayton. Those that were called, I'm sure they thought, wow, can you believe it? I finally made it. I get to go up to Zion. And then they
This is it. This is it.
This is it. They face so many problems.
The millennium's coming. And
suddenly the unexpected tribulations and the sacrifices and the sufferings that they faced. So sometimes when we think, oh, well, finally it's all going to level out and be smooth, you know, it very seldom is, right?
Yeah, it's like you go on a hike a mountain. At least I have memories of, oh, there's the peak right there. And then you get on it and then, nope. But it's also partly our preparation, right?
And preparation.
Maybe we don't realize that we need a little bit of refining.
Refining. Joseph used to say, I'm like a stone that's rolling forth, you know. A
rough stone.
And knocking off an edge here and there. And perhaps that's what's happening to the saints as they stay in Clay County.
Good lessons. All right. Well, thanks, Susan. Are we ready for my...
Thanks, Clayton, for the opportunity.
Yes. Ready for my little duty here to close this out?
I love this part best.
Okay, so here will be verse 2 of Rock of Ages. Not the labors of my hands can fill all thy law's demands. Could my zeal no respite know? Could my tears forever flow? All for sin could not atone. Thou must save, and thou alone. We'll do verse 3. While I draw this fleeting breath, while mine eyes shall close in death, when I rise to worlds unknown and behold thee on thy throne, Rock of Ages cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee. All right. Well, thank you, Susan, as always. We're just very blessed, as I predicted in the beginning, to do this and to hear these. I hope lots of people can hear this. Maybe multiple times. Maybe, you know, do it once and then 10 years later you listen to it again or something. All right, so next time we'll be talking about the saints going up to Caldwell County, maybe, above Clay County.
It.
And then I got to go to these places. I got to go to that Fishing River and the Big Blue.
Uh-huh.
Now and see if I can find the place. I'm going to try to do some videos of some of these
That'd be great.
Places, as I've said to you, Susan. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. Hope you've benefited. And we, any last words, Susan?
No, thanks for listening.
All right. We'll see you next time.